Our next guest is the author of some great books about baseball and pop culture, Big Hair and Plastic Grass, Stars and Strikes, his collaboration with Ron Bloomberg on The Captain and Me, and he writes a wonderful new blog on Substack called Jagged Time Lapse. We always love talking with him on the show. Great to welcome back our friend Dan Epstein. Let's talk about Jagged Time Lapse, which you started, just about 6 months ago now?
Not even. I think it's officially launched at the end of August.
Well, what was the impetus behind this, Dan?
Well, a couple of things. One is that, you know, I've been writing about music professionally and non-professionally for over 30 years now. And in that time, I've accumulated all these stories and interviews and tales that, you know, I often, you know, if you and I were to go out for a drink or dinner somewhere, I would probably pull several of these stories out of my quiver in the course of our meal. And I just thought, like, I've been doing this for years. Why don't I actually write these stories down and so that I can have them all in one place? The other thing is that I've been kind of working on and off over the years of sort of a musical memoir of my adolescence and just, you know, talking about how, you know, specific songs really, you know, not only did it, I really like them, but they really kind of transformed the way I looked at the world. And I'd been sort of, you know, distracted by everything else going on in my life and in the world. And finally, I just thought, you know, if I do something like this, have a Substack where I can post these things as I finish, you know, each chapter as I finish it, that'll give me a little more of a kick in the butt to actually get it done. And then also, I just, you know, music, you know, looking back at, you know, these last few years, which have been difficult for everybody, you know, I look at the things that really kind of brought me happiness in that time. And music is really the thing over everything else, like more than movies, more than baseball, more than food. You know, it's just like music is the thing that I've returned to time and time again for solace, for perspective, for inspiration. And I just thought, like, you know, I need to be doing something that kind of, you know, pays tribute to that and really speaks to the power of music in all of our lives. And I feel like in some ways I have, you know, a slightly more unique angle than many people who write about it, or maybe not, but I like to think so. And I think, you know, a lot of the things I want to write about are not things that I can get my editors at the various publications I write for to sign off on, because they're not about new artists, or they're not about, you know, or they're about, like, you know, some obscure Elvis TV commercial from the early 70s, you know, things that just, like, it wouldn't necessarily move newspapers. But if you're into music and you're into music ephemera and you're into, you know, the kind of more oddball ways that music seeps into our consciousness, I think you'll find it interesting.
Oh, the Elvis commercial, by the way, when I read that, I thought, oh my God, I remember that commercial like it was yesterday, and I could picture those visuals that went along with it.
Absolutely. That was the thing too, you know, because and what inspired me to write about that was that, you know, we just passed Elvis's birthday, and so everybody's talking about Elvis, and I thought, like, well, you know, I'm a little young to have to have seen him at Ed Sullivan. I'm a little young to have witnessed the comeback special in real time. And my parents were not Elvis fans, so they were more into, like, Bob Dylan and Johnny Cash. And so I'm thinking, like, well, where would I have first heard of Elvis? And I realized that the very first time I'd ever even heard of him was on a Dixie Riddle Cup, if you remember those. And the riddle on this particular cup I got, you know, I was probably five. It said, the riddle was, what's green and sing? And the answer was Elvis Parsley. And I didn't get it. And I was very upset that I didn't get it. So I ran to my mom and I was like, what does Elvis Parsley mean? And she's like, well, Elvis Presley is a singer. I was like, oh, okay. And then I just thought, like, well, that's a weird name. But
was it spelled wrong on the cup? Is that what you wrote?
No, it was spelled correctly, but I misread, you know.
Oh, you misread it. Okay.
Misread it as Elves Parsley. And it's like, this makes no sense at all. So, and then about a year later, I see this commercial on TV, you know, they're starting to, you know, come home from after school, turn on the TV to watch, you know, cartoons or the 3:30 movie or whatever. And there, this, it was like a TV commercial for like a 2-record collection of Elvis's greatest hits. And there, and, you know, it was being shown like every 15 minutes. And so, you know, it's like, okay, this must be that Elvis Presley guy from the Dixie Riddle Cup. and the commercial, because they're trying to fit in, you know, it's like 30 songs or whatever, you only get like the hook or just, you know, one line from each song, but they're all like very memorable lines, very exciting. And as you say, like there's just like this handful of kind of stock Elvis images that are just throwing up behind each song. But like I went back and I looked for that commercial on YouTube and I found it. And, you know, like you, I was amazed that when I hear Love Me Tender, like just in any context, I think of the picture that they use in the ad. When I hear Jailhouse Rock, I don't think of the Jailhouse Rock dance sequence from the movie. I think of the picture of him from the 68 comeback special that they use in the commercial behind that little bit of Jailhouse Rock. And so it's just, you know, it's fascinating the way this stuff kind of like, you know, gets into your subconscious and stays there.
Well, and I grew up, and again, too young to have seen Elvis on Ed Sullivan, obviously aware of him. My mom had some old Elvis 45s, but I certainly was not a fan. And in the mid-70s, it wasn't very cool to be an Elvis fan. And when I changed was, actually, it came from his death. I was on the radio when the news, you know, young guy on the radio, and the news came across the teletype that he had died, and I announced it on the radio. And it was the reaction. Our phone in the studio began ringing off the hook with people, mostly women, calling in tears, asking for Elvis songs. And the same thing happened the next day. And I think we played nothing but wall-to-wall Elvis for about 3 days. And hearing what a profound impact he had had on people gave me this new appreciation for his music. And I did a deeper dive. And it was really that led me to become more of a fan.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, as you're saying this, I'm thinking about John Lennon's death, and that was what really pushed me deeper into Beatles fandom, you know, because at that point I liked the Beatles. I didn't know that much about them, but when I saw how I would have been, what, 14 when he was murdered, and when I saw just the intense worldwide reaction, that was like, okay, like I need to know more about this guy. And, you know, clearly there was more to the Beatles than I Want to Hold Your Hand. And, you know, and I wanted to learn more about the context of, you know, that these songs were made in and why, you know, what they meant and all this. So that's really what sent me down the Beatles rabbit hole that I have never fully emerged from since.
We're talking with Dan Epstein. Check out Jagged Time Lapse on Substack. Dan, well, a couple of things that I love about Jagged Time Lapse. One is that you're just a terrific writer, but also your eclectic taste. And to me, that's what's great about it. And I have to think that in some ways has made you more adept at writing about music because you like a lot of very different things.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, for a lot of years, I mean, I've written for Revolver magazine for 20 some odd years, and that's a metal magazine. But you know, I'm not a, you know, specifically a metal writer. That's just, you know, that's a niche I've fallen into, and I like a lot of those bands, and you know, I know how to talk to musicians in that genre. But yeah, I love, you know, when people say, well, what kind of music do you like? You know, if you, people have just met me. I mean, it's all over the place. I just, you know, I literally just received in the mail last night a shipment of six old 78 RPM jazz records from like the 30s and 40s. You know, it's just, and I love everything from like weird, easy listening from the 1960s to, you know, funk and 70s funk and soul. And I mean, yeah, pretty much every decade of the last century produced music that that I love. And yeah, so I mean, one of the freeing things about Jagged Time Lapse is like, it's whatever's on my mind, whatever's obsessing me, I can write about it. And hopefully it'll turn some other people onto some music that maybe they're not familiar with, or maybe they know about, but never really gave it a lot of thought. And so I think that's kind of a problem I have with music journalism in general, you know, in the 21st century, is that it's all geared towards new releases, or, maybe it's geared towards the new release of an archival reissue, you know, a reissue of an album that came out 30, 40 years ago. But it's all about, you know, geared towards commerce and what's happening right at this minute. And I just think, you know, you miss out on so much by just focusing on new releases. And there's no reason you can't go back and, you know, and like I said, like, you know, in the over the pandemic and like going through a divorce, I mean, there's so many times where what made me feel better was not, you know, whatever, you know, the latest hit thing that's, you know, that's cool or supposed to be cool is. It's, you know, it's like digging out some Marvin Gaye album from the early 70s, digging out a Herb Alpert record from the 60s, just something, you know, it's almost like musical comfort food, where it's you just kind of, it takes you back into another era almost.
And it's funny you mentioned Herb Alpert, because, yeah, and you had posted a picture of, I think it was the Going Places album not too long ago, and instantly I flashed back, and I have such vivid memories. Those albums to me meant spring, because my mom would always play those Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass albums the first time she opened the windows in the spring when it was warm and the fresh air was coming in. I started playing trumpet as a kid because I wanted to be like Herb Alpert. And even today, I have those on vinyl, and popping those on the turntable, instantly I'm back there as a kid.
And you know, and those are great records. Like, you know, I think a lot of people were down on Herb Alpert because, oh, it's not real jazz or whatever. But, like, those were all made with the guys from the Wrecking Crew.
Right.
They're just impeccably produced and arranged, and they make you feel good. So what's wrong with any of that?
And I loved your recent piece on Ferranti and Teicher. There aren't a lot of rock critics writing about them.
Yeah, case in point. And this, you know, the name of the Substack, Jagged Time Lapse, is all about the way that music can just, you know, serve as this kind of teleportation, you know, time machine, and take you back to a certain place. And I was driving, I was driving back from my mom's place in Kingston, New York, a couple of weeks ago, had the radio on, and Ferranti and Teicher's theme from Exodus came on. And I remembered that was, you know, that was on this record of, 1960 record of Hollywood, you know, theme music, soundtrack songs, and that it used to get played during my gym classes in elementary school, and that, like, you know, and the, you know, just stuff for us to run around to. But I remember just feeling so profoundly affected by Theme from Exodus, not knowing what the movie was, not knowing who Ferranti and Teicher were, but there is just this dramatic aspect to the music, and it was powerful. And I sat down by the record player in the gym just to listen, and the assistant gym teacher came over, and I thought she was going to be like, you know, Dan, you know, get up and get back out there. And instead she noticed that I was just kind of enraptured with this music, and she sat down next to me, and she said something to the effect of, you know, that's pretty heavy, isn't it? And it was like this amazing moment where, like, it was almost like adult validation. Like I didn't even know how to talk about music at that point or what it was making me feel. And this woman totally picked up on it and kind of almost explained it to me, you know, unintentionally. And I have no idea what her name was, but I am forever in her debt.
We're talking with Dan Epstein. So the other day we had some snow and ice. It was messy. Didn't want to go outside. Channel surfing. And I thought, what can I find that I might want to watch here? And I hadn't seen it since it first came out, but I jumped right back into the Doc Ellis documentary, and you play such a key role in that. What a wonderful film that is.
That really is. It's so great. And I love, you know, and probably not a month goes by where I don't get a message or a text from somebody being like, hey, I just saw you on the Doc Ellis documentary. And I mean, I'm so gratified that people are moved by it and, you know, still find it fascinating and, you know, learn that there really was so much more to Doc Ellis as a player and as a human being than the LSD no hitter, which, you know, admittedly an impressive feat in and of itself, but he deserves to be remembered for far more than that. And it was such an honor to be part of that and you know, become friends with the filmmakers and you know, witness them and root for them as they you know, put it all together. And I mean, but really the best thing was I was at a screening that they did in South Central LA of the film around the time it came out, and Doc's family was there, and I went up to his mother at the end of the screening, and I, you know, introduced myself, and she recognized me obviously from the film. She's like, "I know who you are," and she just said, "Thank you." She said, "Thank you for, you know, for understanding my boy," and that you know, that meant the world to me.
Oh yeah, well, and I love all your books, but I have to tell you that it's become a ritual, a tradition of mine every spring that I read through Big Hair and Plastic Grass again every year, because it gets me ready for baseball season. It reminds me of what I loved about the game. And when I become disgusted with the modern game, I remember those days. And all your books are great. But I have something about that one that takes me back to a special place in my baseball fandom.
Well, that is awesome to hear. And you know what? That's why I wrote the book, was because, like, those, you know, the 1970s were real, you know, aside from being a fascinating decade for the sport, I mean, that was the time when I became a fan, and that was me wanting to reconnect with, you know, that joy and that sense of fandom and interest that I had that I, you know, couldn't find in baseball at the time, and that, you know, so many people, you know, it's done the same thing for. And then for you know, I've heard from a lot of readers over the years who are a lot younger than me and said that it, you know, gave them an appreciation for an era that they didn't get to experience and wish they had. So, I mean, that's pretty much the greatest thing you can tell a writer.
If people would like to subscribe, and by all means, you should go to danepstein.substack.com. I don't even know what it is. It's cheaper than a dozen eggs, but I'm happy to pay it every month because it's so great.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, for you know, it's five. You can subscribe for free and get, you know, quite a number of things to read for free. But if you want all the stuff, which includes a lot of, like, in-depth interviews that I've done that I've never published, and, you know, in their entirety, it's only $5 a month, which is, you know, less than a dozen eggs, less than a cup of coffee. It's less than less than a pint of beer at most bars. So and I think you'll get more enjoyment out of it than any of those things.
Absolutely.
Maybe not the eggs.
Maybe not, but it's the best thing that shows up in my inbox. So I always smile when that day arrives.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Rich. I really appreciate that.
You bet. Hey, it's always great to talk with you, Dan. Thanks for making time for us today. We wish you continued success with Jagged Time Lapse, and look forward to that book, too, down the road.
Right on. Thanks, Rich. And good luck to you with everything.